Welcome to the Talking with Students, Grade Kindergarten through Fifth, About Fragile X Syndrome conference call. My name is Lisa, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Ms. Linda Sorensen. Ms. Sorensen, you may begin.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome. We're glad to have you join us tonight. This is the first of our conference podcast, as we're now calling them, and the idea is to bring to all of you some of the most popular and beneficial sessions from the most recent international conference that we had this last summer in Detroit. And our guest speaker tonight is Holly Rose. Holly's session was very, very well received by a number of our attendees, and we were excited to extend the invitation and have her accept the opportunity to be with you all tonight. For those of you who don't know Holly, and I doubt very much there's anyone who doesn't, but she is the mom of two children, Parker and Allison, who are both affected by Fragile X syndrome. She is the founder and president of the Central Illinois Fragile X Resource Group and a board member of Advocates for Success in Peoria Heights, Illinois. In 2007, Holly was the winner of the Week's 25 Women in Leadership for her work in Fragile X. And our organization, the National Fragile X Foundation, recognized Holly's outstanding contributions to the community with Education and Awareness Award at the 11th International Fragile X Conference. Also joining us tonight is Jane Dixon Weber, who is the Coordinator of Support Services here at the National Fragile X Foundation. Jane has been in that role for 3 years now and is often the first person that people contact for information on diagnosis, treatment issues, behavior issues, IEP questions, you name it. And she's also a parent and brings a wealth of experience to our organization. So we're happy to have her here tonight as well. So if you didn't notice on our website, there is a PDF version of the PowerPoint presentation Holly's going to be taking us through. And that can be found at www.fragilex.org. On the right-hand menu selection is a tab called Resources. When you mouse over that, upcoming webcasts pops up in the submenu, and that will bring you to the page about tonight's webcast, and at the bottom of that is a link to the PowerPoint. So if you don't have that up already, you might want to bring that up on your computer. It's a nice way to follow along with tonight's presentation. One more little housekeeping thing here, and then I'm going to let Holly hand it over. The foundation did put together in the last year a very helpful brochure for those of you who are planning to do a talk with students called Do You Know Someone with Fragile X? And it's definitely geared towards kids, and it makes a great handout for those classroom or brownie troop presentations. So please don't hesitate to contact the foundation and order a free supply of those for your upcoming talks. Holly, you take it away.
Great. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming tonight. I'm really excited to be doing this. As Linda said, my name is Holly Rose, and my husband and I do have two children, Parker and Allison, with Fragile X. This is going to be kind of interesting because typically when I do this presentation, it's very interactive, and I really want the parents in the group to understand, you know, how it feels like to be in the classroom and to participate with me in it. So I'm going to be doing a lot of participating with myself, and maybe Jane will jump in here a little bit too to really hopefully help you get the feel of what it's like. And there's definitely going to be a lot of time to answer questions at the end. So if you think of anything, just write it down or email them and be sure to let us know. I let everybody know that this is such an important thing that that we do. And going out and talking to schools is one of the most important things that I do. And it's also one of the hardest things that I do. And I don't think that we really realize exactly how hard and emotional it is until we step into that classroom and we look at all of our children's peers. And I remember the first time I walked into Parker's classroom. Parker's my oldest, so I've spoken to his classes several more times than Allison's. And the first time I walked in, I just kind of stood there and I realized the importance of what I was about to do. Because reaching out to these children, we're really going to make a difference in his school life and in his social life outside of school. And it really is a great impact. And it's such a great opportunity to reach the children at whatever age you start. I really believe the younger that you can start talking to the students, the better it is. But at whatever age you start, it's going to leave an impact on these students. And that's such a powerful thing. It's very emotional. The first couple of years that I did it, there were tears as I started, and I'm just very upfront and honest with the children that I've done a lot of great things, and I've spoken to many wonderful and very important people, but they are really, truly the very most important people in Parker's lives, and that means a lot to me. And that's why it's hard for me, and that's why sometimes I cry, because I am a crier. And so sometimes those first couple years, I said, you know, I just need my Kleenex handy. And during the introduction of saying who I am, then there were a few tears. But this is by far the most important talk that you will ever give, in my opinion. As I said, I travel all over speaking to everybody. I've spoken at 2 congressional briefings. I speak at the University of Illinois. I speak at Graham Hospital. I do every group, no matter if there's 2 in the group or 1,000 in the group, I'll speak to them. And so I've spoke to quite a few people, but it's always the students that are the most important to me, and knowing that they're really going to make a difference, not just in the lives of our children, but of all children with disabilities. And so it's very important to me, and I think that's a lot of pressure, but I guarantee you, and every parent that I've talked through this and helped them form an outline for, they've come back and said the exact same thing I did, which this was the most wonderful thing they have ever done. Everybody's walked away with a really great feeling and just really that feeling of this really was a very important thing to do, and they were so glad they did it. So my goal is to really give you the tools and a general outline to help you get started and to go out there and to make that connection with your child's class and to be in the schools and get involved and make this talk for them. So this is a great opportunity to help children understand Fragile X in a positive way, and so going on. I've broken up the slides into a couple different groups, kindergarten through first grade, and then second through third grade, and then fourth through fifth grade. When we're looking at kindergarten through first graders, it's always important to remember that they have a very, very short attention span. I always took visuals. Children are very visual learners no matter what age, but what I did was I took a toy fire truck, and I took the toy fire truck in to talk about, you know, how it's what it's like to play with different things. And I turned the fire truck on, and it had remote control. And what I could do was with the remote, I could turn on the lights and the sirens, and it would make noise, and the ladder would go up and down, and it would drive all over. And the kids absolutely loved it. And they had a lot of fun watching me play with the truck. And I had a couple kids up, and they played with the truck. And I said, okay, I said, now let's take the batteries out and see what happens. And so we took out the batteries, and actually with this truck, what you could do is you could still make the truck's ladder move, and the truck could still move, but the lights and sirens didn't work. And I was like, wow, I'm like, I don't know, do you still want to play with us? You know, because not, you know, the lights don't work and the sirens don't work. I'm like, I don't know, should we just put it away or would you like to keep playing? And they were all like, no, we want to keep playing with it. And I was like, exactly. I said, some people are like this fire truck, where everything on them works wonderfully, and then there's some people where not everything works quite the same, and they might be just a little bit different. But even though they're different, they're still fun to play with. And that really hit home with them. And it was actually a mom in our group, Charlotte Davis, who had told me about that idea, and her son is in high school now, and she had said she had used that with her son's class when they were talking. And she was right on the nail with that one. I mean, all the kids were just, they really got it. That really clicked with them. So the one thing I do, and I'll talk about this more in detail in a little bit, is I talk about how the kids are similar, and I talk about how they're different, and in the end, and how they're all the same. I talk a lot about feelings, about wants, and about needs, and one of the most important things I do is talk about how they can help. When they're in second and third grade, I take the knowledge from the year before, and I build on that knowledge. And I always review specific things, and we always talk very specifically about Parker. One of the questions I always get is Parker in the classroom when I talk? And I don't have Parker in the classroom when I talk. And part of that reason is because I don't belong at school. In Parker's mind, I belong at home. I don't belong in the school. His teachers belong in school. And even though now in sixth grade he's fine with seeing me in the hallways, I still don't belong in front of the class talking to all of his friends. And so I always do this while Parker's doing something else with another teacher. But as I go each year, I build on the knowledge from before. I always quiz them a little bit to see how much they remember. And then I add more information. I still use a lot of visuals with them. I don't bring the toy in anymore in second and third grade, but I use the chalkboard or a whiteboard quite a bit. And I talk about ways that they have helped, and then I build on that. If you're looking at the slides, the next slide, the sixth one, is a picture of Parker with some of his friends. And that is actually in fourth grade. And it just really reminds me of how far he had come at that point and how close his friends were. In fourth and fifth grade, I add, again, to the detail, I talk about how the gene is passed. Just to add sixth grade on here real quick, when I talked to the sixth graders this year, I talked a lot about genetics and the gene. Oftentimes, especially in fifth and sixth grade, I've done the hyperarousal experiment that Tracy and Mouse do, the hands-on experiment. I give more credit to the peers for the help that they've done, and I remind them of their role and how important it is. So I'm going to go through that and explain a lot of that. I know that just seems kind of vague right now, but I will go through and explain that more here as we go on. Some questions that I get is, when should I go? I think the earlier in the school year you go, you know, the better off it is, simply because it starts the school year off on a good note. It gives you a chance to get in the early months, September, October, and even November. The earlier in the school year you go, then they understand from the beginning, because it is different and it is intimidating and it is, you know, they're always a little unsure. And so I think the sooner you can help them feel at ease with the situation, especially if you have a school like ours where inclusion is not something that's really seen a lot of. At our school, Parker was the first one in his school who had a disability to the extent that he did. They had seen mostly some behavior issues, a lot of ADD, but children who had the type of mental impairment that Parker has did not go to his school, and we really pushed for him to go there because it was his home school, and that's where his friends from, you know, the street were, and so our neighborhood. that's where we wanted him to go. And so for a lot of these children, this was very new to them. Again, should my child be present? That's really something that's up to you. It's not something I do with Parker. However, it is something I do with Allison. Allison is a lot less affected, and she is mainstreamed throughout her day, but she does have adaptations to help her. So she has a slant board to help her with her writing and her vision, because she has some pretty significant vision issues. And she has a move and sit cushion to help her with some sensory needs. And we have a whole container that has several different types of fidgets in it as well that the whole class has access to. And Allison's very, very verbal, and she loves to help answer questions. And so with Allison, she is present in the classroom, and she does help me answer questions at the end, but that's not something I could do with Parker. How do you set it up? I strongly recommend just talking to the teacher to start with, and typically then you're going to have to go through the principal after that, but the teacher is really great about facilitating that communication and helping get that set up. Sometimes they want you to go through the social worker, but I would just start with your teacher. Just approach them with the idea, let them know what you're wanting to do and the information you're wanting to share and why you're wanting to share it, and then work with them as a team to go through any additional steps, be it the principal or any administration that they may need to get approval for. Should I send home information to the parents, and if so, what do you send? Again, this is a great time to have that brochure, the Talking to Kids About Fragile X Syndrome from the Foundation, to send home. It's an excellent brochure that's great for the parents and the children. I have a letter as well to go with it that's really specific to Parker and to Allison that explains Fragile X and a little bit about how they're affected and how the parents can help, and it's real specific to our situation. I didn't include that in the PowerPoint simply because I didn't think about it, but my email address is on the end, and I would be happy to email that out for anybody to look at. Diane Sothard, who is, I think she's the president now of our Missouri group, but she's very involved with the St. Louis group, also has emailed me her letter, and so her son is younger. And it's just a little bit different take on it, so she would be happy to share that as well. So I do have both of those I would be happy to share, and I think they're great to attach with a brochure from the foundation. I think it's a good idea to let the parents know what you're talking about, and also so they have accurate information, they understand more, and it helps them be able to answer questions that may come home as well. And then what if there's a question that you can't answer? It very well could happen. A lot of the questions that are going to come from the kids are going to be very specific to your child. And so I would actually be kind of surprised if there was a question that came up that you couldn't answer, but if the question did come up that you couldn't answer, I am a huge believer in honesty. Just, you know what, I'm sorry. I really don't know that answer, but I know how I can find out. And find out the answer, get back to the teacher, and let the teacher share that answer with them. I haven't come across that yet, but I think if you come across it, you know, by all means, just be honest with them and tell them you'll find out an answer and let them know what a great question it is, because now you're both going to learn something. So remember the reason why you're going. And for me, it was this is a picture, if you're following the slides, of Parker, again, in his classroom. And for me to hit a point where we could, I could go into the classroom and take pictures of him doing things with his peers, really is a credit to the staff at our school and definitely to his peers for how much they helped him with all of this. Sorry. So this is what we're going to do. So I'm going to kind of go through how I do this and what it's like when I'm in a classroom and show you what that's like. So when I go to the classroom, I obviously always introduce myself first. I let them know that my name is Mrs. Rose. I always tell the kids it's okay to call me Holly because I'm more informal like that. I let them know that I'm Parker's mom. I say some of you already know me and some of you have never met, and I'm here to talk to you today about Parker and Fragile X. And when I talk to the students in kindergarten and first grade, I only had the kids that were in Parker's class. But from second grade on, I had the entire second grade and the entire third grade and the entire fourth grade. When Parker moved in fifth grade to the middle school, we consolidated three schools to our middle school. So there was a significant amount of kids that had never been with Parker. Or if they had, it was in the park district playing t-ball or something, and it had been a while and they really had never seen him in an academic setting. So I always ask the kids, you know, how many of you guys know Parker? And, you know, how many of you guys have, you know, have seen me talk before, or maybe you've seen Parker and I out. And I just kind of break the ice a little bit and, you know, let them know, you know, who I am and why I'm there. And, again, I tell them, I said, this is a very important talk because you are very important people in Parker's life. And so it's very important for me that you understand why Parker's special and about his disability and about Parker in ways that we can help Parker together so that he can be successful. And then the first thing I do before I even talk about Fragile X at all anymore, I ask them things that they like. And so either on the chalkboard or on a whiteboard, I do a whole list. I just say, so let's talk about you guys. You know, before we talk about Parker, let's talk about you. What are some things you like to do at school? And what are some things you like to do at home? And so I'll make a list. And, you know, depending on how active the group is, I, you know, list between 10 and 20 things. I try to limit it at 20 or we just run out of time. But a lot of times I'll get things like, I'd like to ride my bike, and I like to play with my friends, or I like to play the Wii or video games. I like to go swimming, and I like to go to the movies. I like to play on the computer. I like to go to football games. I like to go out to eat. I like to watch TV. And I'm like, well, what about school? What are things at school? They're not always so quick to say things they like about school as quick as they are to say things they like outside of school. So they may say things like recess, lunch, being with their friends, math, PE, music, the teachers, or art. And then I go through every single one of these individually. And I'll say, let's talk about Parker now. I said, you know, well, do you think Parker likes to ride his bike? And then I'll wait and let them answer. And then I'll say, do you think Parker likes to play with his friends? And I'll, you know, if they say yes or no, whatever their answer is, I'll say, yes, Parker does like to play with his friends. And if he likes to do it, I circle it. And then if it's something he doesn't like to do, like going to football games, I'll cross that out on our list on the board. And like going out to eat, I'll cross that out because Parker's not fond of going out to eat. And so at the end, on the board, I have a big list with a lot of circles and a few things that are crossed out. And then I'll say, you know, let's talk about this. Let's talk about why, you know, Parker doesn't like to go to football games. You know, why do you think Parker wouldn't want to go to a football game? And we talk about it being very crowded. We talk about it being very noisy. We talk about, because Parker, especially now as he's older, the kids are very well aware of his sensory issues. He has a lot of sensory issues with smell. So, like, well, it might smell funny, which is why we don't go out to eat quite as often as we would like to. So we go through everything on the list. And, you know, and with, like, riding his bike, Parker has a three-wheeled bike. And I'll say Parker loves to ride his bike, and many of you have seen him ride his bike. But does Parker's bike look like your bike? And they'll say, no, Parker's bike has three wheels. I'll say, exactly. But it's still a bike, and he still loves to ride his bike just like you do. So we talk about everything on the list, the things he likes and the things he doesn't, and why he likes the things he likes and why he doesn't. And then I say, you know, wow, when we look at this list, there's a whole bunch of things that are circled and not very many that are crossed off. Parker is so much like you. Did you realize Parker was so much like you, and he likes these things about school, and he likes these things, you know, about being outside of school? And they're always like, yeah, you know, there is a lot that's the same. And as the kids get older, and I've done this talk more with them, they like to point out stuff specifically that Parker likes, so there's nothing crossed off on the list. It's always been very successful. And even in sixth grade, when I spoke to all of the sixth graders, we did a list, and we talked about all the things Parker likes and he doesn't like. And the biggest thing I point out on the list, because it always comes up, is playing with my friends or hanging out with my friends or having a sleepover with my friends. There's always something with my friends that's on there. And I say, you know what, Parker feels exactly like you do. Parker loves his friends very much, and it's very important to Parker to have friends, just like it's very important to you to have friends. Can you imagine what it would feel like if you did not have any friends at all? And I always let him think on that for a little bit, and I say, because, you know, sometimes for kids like Parker and children with disabilities, they don't have many friends because maybe they do things differently, or maybe they look differently, or they sound differently. And I said, and sometimes that makes people think that they don't want to be friends with them. I said, but as we look at our list, we really know there's a lot of things that Parker likes to do just like you, and he thinks and feels the same way you guys do. So it's just important for him to have his friends as it is for you guys to have your friends. And the bottom line with that is you're a lot more alike than you are different. We always talk, again, with the things Parker doesn't like. Parker, until this year, has never eaten lunch in the cafeteria because it's entirely too loud for him, and the smells have always been too much. So they've always done lunch groups where they could sign up to go eat with him. And I talk about why Parker can't eat in the cafeteria, you know, because of the noise. And does anybody else think the cafeteria is real noisy, or some days it smells real funny? And they, you know, there's always a way that you can find a way to help them relate to that. So then I talk about, you know, why is Parker different? And in kindergarten and first grade, this is where I talked about the toy. And I would get out the toy fire truck and I'd say, so let's talk about, you know, why Parker is different and what makes Parker different. And I would get out the fire truck and we would do the whole fire truck thing. And I said, well, you know, I said, Parker is just like this too. And I said, you know, he's just like the fire truck. And the reason Parker is like our fire truck where the lights and sirens don't work is because he has something called Fragile X syndrome. And I always put that on the board this so they can see it. And I said, have any of you heard of Fragile X before? And when they were in earlier grades, they hadn't. Of course, now that he's in sixth grade, they can tell you what it is. You can ask any sixth grader in Canton and they'll tell you what Fragile X is. But I said, you know, Fragile X is something Parker was born with. And it's very important that you understand that you can't get Fragile X from playing with Parker. You can't get it from hanging out with him. You can't get it from helping him read a story. You can't get it from being his friend. It's something that he's born with, and you have to be born with Fragile X. And we talk about Parker and his senses and how Parker takes in everything around him. And when he was littler, I said, you know, it's kind of like being a superhero. You know, Parker hears every noise, and he sees everything going on around him, and he can smell things from really far away. And we'll get really quiet, and we'll listen, and we'll listen for things that we can hear. You know, maybe it's a buzzing in the lights or somebody walking by in the hall or something going on outside. And I'm like, now when I was talking, did you hear those things? And typically they're like, no. And I'm like, well, you know, I didn't either because I don't really pay attention to that because I'm listening to who's talking. But those are things Parker hears all the time, and it's hard for him to teach his body to understand that he has to tune those out and listen to me because he's got all these senses going on. I said it's like superhero senses. He knows all of them all the time. And so they, in those younger grades, they always think that's kind of cool. In second and third grade, I ask them if they remember the fire truck, but I don't bring it back in. But instead, on the blackboard, I talk about Fragile X and the protein, and I let them know that in people who have Fragile X, that there's a protein that's missing. And because this protein is missing, it's really hard for Parker to learn and to sometimes make good choices. And I talk about how everybody is born with a Fragile X gene and how it works in everybody's body is different, which is why Parker's sister does really, really well, even though she has Fragile X, but Parker's doesn't. I talk about how Parker's body isn't making any of the protein at all and ways that affects him. When Parker was in second and third grade, he wasn't talking very much at all. So I talked about how it made it very difficult for Parker to talk. We talked about how when Parker would get really anxious, he would lay on the floor or hide under his desk, how Parker would have to get up and walk around quite a bit. And I talk about how that affects him. I always let them know again that it's not contagious and you can't get it from being his friend. And I always tell them that Parker got this from me, that this is something that has been in our family for a very long time and that I carry this gene and that I passed this gene to him and I passed it to his sister and it's something that's in our family. When they're in fourth and fifth grade, and I did this in sixth grade, I go into a lot of more in-depth protein explanation. I put up a whole chart that talks about the CGG repeats and how it expands with every different type from our normal areas to our gray zones, our carriers, and our full mutations. And I ask them, you know, how do you think that affects Parker? You know, when it's supposed to look like this, but it really looks like this, so now it's not making any protein. I'm like, you know, how do you think that's going to affect him and his daily life? And we talk about that quite a bit. And actually with the sixth graders this year, after I went in and did it, they asked me to come back and talk during their science quarter on genetics. And so we're going to go back and do that a lot more in detail with them. I talk when he's in fourth and fifth grade about how the gene is passed. I always put everything up on the board for them so it's very visual. I talk about, you know, the X chromosomes and the Y chromosomes and how they're passed and how that passes the gene. throughout the families, and I have a big poster. We can go six generations in our family, so I bring the poster and I show them every generation, and I talk about how it went through every generation. And I ask them, what does it mean not to have this protein? And the best example I've found to give kids, which is very different than the example that I give adults when I'm speaking to adults, is that, I said, the genes are very important in your body, and their job is to make protein. And when that protein's not there, then there's a lot of things that happen that make life very difficult. And I said, so kind of what it's like to not have that protein would be like if we're all walking down a road and there's a big river. And I said, the protein is kind of like the bridge. And if the bridge isn't there, then we don't have a way to get across the river. And so when there's connections that are going on in your brain, if there's no protein, then there's no bridge, then there's no way to get from one point to another. And when that's missing, then we have the effects of Fragile X, and that's when we see the speech delay or the poor muscle tone. We talk about the poor eye contact. And then we talk about things they can do. One of the big things that I tell them that every group of every age has always liked is I always say, whoever the teacher is, I'll say, now, I'm going to ask Mrs. Breeze to not listen to us for a little bit because I need to talk about her, and I always give the teacher a heads up that I'm going to do this. And I said, but I really need you guys to listen to me. So the teacher will kind of step to the back of the room and close her ears, and I'll say, now, in this classroom, Mrs. Breeze is the very most important person to you. You need to listen to her, and you need to follow her directions, and you need to know that if you're going to learn, she is the most important person in this classroom to you. However, with Parker, he's really not going to learn a lot from Mrs. Breeze. So she's really not the most important person in here for Parker. The most important person in here for Parker is each of you, because Parker learns from peer modeling, which means Parker learns from watching the people around him. So when you're learning how to write your name and you're putting your letters together, or when you're learning how to count, or you're doing math, or you're reading a book, or you're working on flashcards, I said, whatever you're doing, Parker's watching you. And this is how Parker learns. I said, so really, you are Parker's teachers. And it's very important to me as Parker's mom that I know that I can count on you to be good teachers. Because if you do something kind of silly or kind of crazy, Parker's going to think that's okay too because you're the teacher. And so I put a lot of the responsibility on them to really step it up in the class and to help Parker and to explain things to him, and when they work in groups to be sure that Parker can, see what they're doing and work together with what they're doing, so that they understand that he's really learning from watching what they do. And then I give them a lot of responsibility. One of the things that I talked about in Detroit was my biggest fear with Parker was that he was going to be bullied. And I, there's a lot of things that Parker can't do. And defend himself is something that I worry about, that he doesn't have the ability to come home and tell me, or he doesn't have the ability to go to a teacher and tell them. He does have a para that's with him all the time, but I needed to know that there were going to be kids that looked out for him too. And so I had spent a lot of time, just even picking him up before and after school as I would wait for him, seeing the kids that would come in and out. I volunteer a lot in the class, in the school, so I could see the kids in the hallway and in the library and in the cafeteria. And I had pretty much singled out who the ringleader of the group that could very possibly be bullies was going to be. And in our case, it was a little boy named Josh. And I had watched Josh with Parker from a distance for quite a while, and there were times where Josh was, kind of on the fence with, what should he do or what should he say with Parker. And then there were times with Josh that you could tell he was very intentionally not being nice to Parker, but unless you were paying attention, he was very smooth about it. And so I knew that Josh was one that I really had to reach, and that if I didn't reach Josh, that he was going to be the one that was going to make Parker's school career difficult. And so I singled Josh out when I was talking about giving them responsibility. And I said, Josh, I said, I see you come out every day after school while I'm waiting on Parker. I said, you know, if you would tell Parker goodbye every day after school, I said, Parker at some point is going to say goodbye back. I said, and that's such an important skill for him to learn, to say hello, to say goodbye, to have those greetings. I said, you know, if you could take just 1 second every time you saw Parker to tell him in the mornings, good morning, or say, how are you, Parker? I said, and wait for him to answer. I said, I bet, you know, if we wait 2 weeks, Parker will start talking back to you. And I gave him a job, and I said, you know, now all of you guys, this is something you all need to do. You know, every time you see Parker, you know, you need to use your those social greetings. You need to say, hi, how are you? And I said, you know, and if he doesn't answer, say, Parker, I am fine today, or I am good today. I said, and let's see what happens. Let's see if Parker starts mimicking you. I said, because remember, I said, you are his teachers. I talked about how they could read to Parker, and they could help him with his counting and his spelling and his sight words. And I reminded them, you know, what you do, he will do too. And what we saw with Josh was every day after school, Josh would make a point to tell Parker bye. There was times when he would come out before Parker, and then he would wait for him until he saw him. And I told Josh, I said, you know, I said, try giving him a high five when you tell him goodbye. You know, I said, do something to make that connection, and let's see if we can make this happen. And sure enough, within a couple of weeks, every time Parker would see Josh, he would tell him bye, or he would say hi. And Josh really got so much from that. And what came of that was Josh is now one of Parker's best friends. And it really turned him around, and it really gave him a purpose. And he comes by out of the blue now. He lives a couple blocks away. He'll stop by out of the blue and knock on the door and come hang out with Parker for an hour or two at the house on the weekend. And in school, if there's anybody in the hallway that kind of makes fun of Parker or looks at him funny, Josh is the first one to step up and say, you know what, he has a disability and you don't get to do that. And he's by far Parker's biggest defender. And to see the friendship that's formed between them and knowing what it could have been if I hadn't reached out to Josh, I just could not be more proud of both of them, but especially of Josh and how hard he's worked on this. I talk a lot about Parker being different. And when the kids are younger and I first go in, it takes a long time for them to feel comfortable talking about how Parker's different. And the same way I made a list that said, you know, things Parker likes, I talk about ways Parker's different. And we make a list again on the blackboard. And so, you know, I'll say, you know, is there anything you notice about Parker that's different than you guys? And if they don't answer right away, I'll say, really? You haven't noticed anything different about Parker? Because I notice things that are different all the time. And I'm like, how about how sometimes if you ask him a question, he'll lay his head down and snore. I'm like, you have to admit that's a little different. And they'll be like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, or how about when Parker doesn't want to do something, he will lay on the floor, right in the middle of the floor, and we all have to walk around him. And they're like, yeah, okay. I'm like, so what else? I'm like, because I know there's more. So they'll talk about how he jumps when he's excited, or he'll flap his hands, or he has this high-pitched squeal that he does when he's really super excited. And so I'll make a list, and I'll say, okay, now let me tell you why Parker does each of these things. And for Parker, when he puts his, when he snores, it makes him invisible. If he's asleep, you can't see him. I said, so if he's anxious or he's nervous or if there's something he doesn't want to do because it's too hard, he's going to try sleeping so you think he's not there. I said, but we know Parker's there, and we know we need to find ways to help Parker through what he's doing. And I go through every single one of those things, and I say, you know what, it's okay to notice these things about Parker. It's okay to notice that Parker is different. I said, it's okay to ask me any question that you have, and it's okay to ask the teacher's questions or your parents' questions. I said, but it's never okay to make fun of him for things that he does. I said, it's never okay to make fun of anybody with a disability. I talk a little bit then about disabilities in general because I think it's very important for them to know that Parker's not the only one with a disability and Fragile X isn't the only disability out there. That, you know, just as I want them to accept Parker and have Parker be his friend, if there's somebody who's in a wheelchair or somebody who can't see or somebody who has a disability like Parker, that looking at him, you wouldn't know they had a disability, but when you try talking to them or playing with them, you notice that there's something different. And I say, you know what? It is never okay to make fun of anybody. And, you know, there's a lot of things about having a disability that they had absolutely no control over. I said, Parker didn't ask to be born with Fragile X, just like you didn't ask to be born with brown hair or blonde hair or to need glasses or to be tall or to be short. I said, this isn't something Parker had a choice on. I said, so it's very important that you understand when you're out in the community, if you're at the grocery store or you're at the park, that it's not okay to make fun of somebody just because they're different or because they can't do something as well as you can. And I said, it's very important that you put yourself in their shoes and you remember, you know, how that would feel if somebody made fun of you because of the way you looked, or if you couldn't talk, if they made fun of you because you couldn't talk or you couldn't talk as well. So we do a whole little piece on that. As they've gotten older, as I said, I do talk about sensory processing, and I absolutely love Tracy and Mouse's hands-on sensory processing experience. I did that with the entire group of sixth graders, so there was literally like 340 sixth graders, and that was really entirely too many to be counting out into threes, but we did the experiment, and it really was wonderful, and they really got a lot out of that. So I'm pretty sure Linda could help get a hold of that from Tracy and Mouse. I'm sure it's on the conference proceedings if anybody wants more information on that. I always leave more time than I would think for questions, and I'm always prepared for any questions. The biggest thing I've learned is the questions that go through their mind are not the questions that you're going to expect. I get a lot of questions like, does he like spaghetti? Does he like to ride in the car? Does he like to watch TV? Or, you know, things that, you know, that aren't quite what I was thinking when we were going in. They're always going to ask you something that you're not expecting. The best question I've been asked is if I was really Parker's mom, because even though I'm a carrier of the gene, I'm not affected like Parker is. And I said, yeah, I am definitely Parker's mom, and I've got the pictures to prove it. It's very important that you stay on their level. I know I expect a lot from the kids that I talk to, and with talking to them about the protein and talking to them about genes. I know I introduce it at a very early age, but I'm yet to come across a group of students, and I talk to students outside of Parker's class, but at several different schools throughout our area. I'm yet to come across a class who didn't step up to the plate and really get the information I gave them. And I'm there to be their friend. I want them to know they can come to me absolutely at any time that they need to come to me, and that I'm always going to be there to answer their questions. So I know that's a lot, and it kind of went through it really fast, and I'm sure there's something that I left out, but I want to be sure we have time to answer questions too, and if there's anything Jane wants to add on, I want to be sure there's time for that as well.
Holly, thank you. Thank you. Jane, I'd love to hear from you.
That was great, Holly. It was really nice. You know, it's so interesting because Ian's now, my son is now 22, and everything you said, I went into his kindergarten class right after school started to talk to them, and you're right about the emotions. It took me by surprise. I thought, you know, the same thing. I had given talks to groups of adults, but there was something about those kids that I remember thinking, you know, this might be, you know, this is probably the first time that these children have ever heard anything like this, have heard a mom come in and talk about somebody with a disability. It's really hard to say what happens in family conversations. So I agree with Holly. It's a very important thing to do. And I did it for Ian. And like Holly, Ian was not in the classroom. And it's a way to, Ian carried some of these friends with him all through high school. And so it's something that will help your child and help the other kids their entire school life. So it's a wonderful thing to do. It's great. I'm just thrilled. So maybe we could open up to see if anybody has any questions.
Absolutely. Lisa? You're still with us?
Yes.
So we'd love to take some questions from our listeners now.
Okay, great. Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone.
So I got an email that just came in, and the mom wants to know if you ever got any reactions from the children's parents, or any kind of parent reactions that you got.
I always got really positive feedback. Because I would pick Parker up from school, I would usually hang out, you know, there with all the parents as we waited for our kids to come out. And I always had parents say, you know, that their kids came home and talked about it. There was one little boy who really took the ball and ran with it, and his mom called me at home and said, you know, listen, there's this Time Kids publication that they do in the schools. And she said, you know, my son wrote something about Fragile X for this that he wants to submit, but I'd like you to look it over before he turns it in. And that was in third grade. And he actually wrote something every year and submitted it to Time Kids, and unfortunately it was never published. And I never, you know, I read it through, and then I would talk with him, but he was so accurate about so much of it. And there was a couple little things that I was like, well, okay, I may not have said it like that, but you know, I wasn't in third grade either, and in third grade, that's exactly how he saw it, and so it was really perfect to come from him. So I've always had a really great response from the parents and a lot of support for going in there and talking with the kids.
Okay, and we have Angelia Dixon online with a question.
Hi, I loved your talk. It was really touching. I want to thank you so much for all the information. It was really helpful. And my question is my son Ty, he is now in the third grade, and he wasn't diagnosed until 2008, but I would like to talk to his third grade class about how they can help him, you know, like you said, with these reading and spelling and all that. But how can I really get them to help him on his level? Because I know they're learning at, you know, way above where he's at.
Sure. With Parker, all of Parker's work is modified, but he's still in the class he's in there in third grade. He was in there throughout the day. He was included for 85% of his day, and so he heard the things that they were doing, even though when it came time to do his worksheets, they were modified. So I would just let them. There's so much your son, in my opinion, there's so much your son gets from listening to them. It's probably more than we're giving them credit for. Because I know with Parker, he would sit and listen to one of his peers read a book that he would, like a chapter book, that he would never in a million years let me read to him because it was his peers. And then in our schools, they take AR tests, the accelerated reading tests. And so they would read him, you know, a chapter or two or three out of this book, and then he would go take a test on it and do excellent. And yet if I would try to read him this chapter book, I would be lucky to get through, you know, the first two paragraphs before he had had enough and didn't want to listen to me. So, you know, I think just letting them know that your son, you know, even though it looks like he's not paying attention, if he's like Parker, he's looking like he's not paying attention because he's watching everything else going on in the classroom, that he is getting a lot from them. And for them to just keep talking and to keep doing what they're doing with their interactions with him, because, you know, over time then they will start to see that he is, you know, actually picking up on everything and that he will start doing those things. When we did math in third grade with Parker, we brought manipulatives in, and Parker was really big into Spider-Man, so we had these little tiny Spider-Man pieces. And as they were doing math, the kids would bring out Parker's Spider-Man box, and then they would count out the math with him to help him do the math that way. So even though it was a math that they were probably doing in kindergarten or first grade, they obviously knew how to do it. And so then they would help Parker with the manipulatives and help him count them out as well. Jane, do you have more to add on that?
You know, I can think of one thing. I know that when Ian actually was in the third grade, they used these kind of peers throughout his elementary years. But for example, in this case, you know, if a student, you know, finished their work early or quickly, then those were typically the kids that went back and helped Ian. So, you know, they had a few minutes and they would go back and do that with Ian, and then throughout the day that would happen. So the kids would kind of, you know, try to get their work done, so then they could go back and, you know, kind of like what Parker had, they, you know, with the manipulatives. They really like that, and they really like showing other kids how to do stuff.
We use that as incentive at our school too. If you were done early, or, you know, that you could actually earn time with Parker, you could earn lunch with him, and you could earn time helping him with things. And so they've only used Parker as an incentive because the kids like working with him so much.
Great. That helps so much.
Thank you.
Lisa, do we have any other questions?
Yes, we have Tammy Anderson online with a question.
Oh, good.
Hi. This was really awesome listening to this. This is all very new to me as far as speaking to other people about Fragile X. My question is Parker in the class all day with his fellow students?
He is in the class. Now that he's in sixth grade, he is in the class 70% of the day with his students.
Okay.
With his peers. And he has a para with him at all times.
Okay. Now, when he was, Evan is in the third grade. He is only in the classroom, regular ed, for 1 hour a day with his peers. They have an autism class at the school, and they've put him in there. They know his diagnosis, and they you know, or recognize that. But I just don't know if he should be in the class more than 1 hour a day in regular ed. Do you have any suggestions on that?
Do you want to take that one, Jane, or do you want me to?
I can start.
Okay.
You know, it's really, I mean, I know part of it is what school districts, you know, like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is what, you know, what's best for Evan. You know, would Evan, do you think he would benefit from being in the classroom more? I mean, you know, I don't know his, you know, it's hard to say with, you know,
characteristics
and stuff. But, you know, it seems like younger, I mean, it'd be great if you could get him in there more. I think that's a personal thing. Again, it's not only kid, but it's also, you know, what you want to.
Right.
I agree completely with Jane. I'm kind of surprised it's just the 1 hour a day, especially when there's activities like music and art and PE.
He's not offering any of those things.
Really, I mean, those are really simple times to let him be with the other kids. But I agree absolutely. It's really based on what's best for Evan and what he's going to do the best with. Third grade, so young. I would look into that a little bit and just, you know, maybe take it a little bit at a time. You know, talk with the team at the school and try adding an art, and, you know, talk with the kids, you know, even before you do it, and say, you know what, we're gonna work on getting Evan in the classroom with you more, but this is gonna take your help too. And I'm really big on putting that responsibility on the kids and saying, listen, we can make this work, but I need you to do this. And this is how you can help Evan be successful in art. You know, you can help him, you know, find where he's going to sit, and you can help him, you know, with his projects, and you can, you know, maybe help him when it mold his clay or open his paint or, you know, give him his crayons or something. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of ways you can help them help you so Evan is more successful in those environments as well.
Great. The more I learn about Fragile X, the more I think he needs to be with his peers more than he does, you know, excluded, you know, from regular ed. So this was very interesting and gave me some great tools to work with and just some great information. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy. I think we might have time for one more question. Lisa, if anyone's waiting.
Sure. Angelia Dixon's online with a question.
Yes. This is Angela again. Thank you for taking my second question. Just
sure.
To add to Tina's question about her son, I know with Ty, like he's in the regular classroom like 2 to 3 hours a day. But like you guys were saying, you know, even if it's just music or art or PE or any of the specialty classes, you know, he really enjoys that interaction, you know, with those classes. And the way we done it is we just kind of upped his time, even if it was just like in the beginning of the school year, even if it was just like 15 more minutes here or 20 more minutes there, you know, we kind of went like what kind of mood he was in and kind of went from there. And now he's just doing more and more with them. So she might want to talk to him about this, you know, gradually, you know, increasing
his time.
Yeah,
start small and work your way in.
Great idea. My question for you all again, you were saying about the cafeteria with Parker. Mm-hmm. That is one of our battles right now. Ty does not like the cafeteria. And he does good on some days when they go in there and eat, but the most of the time he does not like it. And the principal has said there is no eating in the classroom. And I'm kind of torn
That's an accommodation you can have written into your IEP. There's really no reason that he can't take his lunch does he have a para with him?
He has a full-time aide with him.
Yeah, there's no reason they cannot take his lunch and have a classroom that's empty where they can eat in, because they're going to have empty classrooms at the time. For Parker, it was a matter of he simply couldn't. He would sit in the cafeteria, and he would typically be under the table, or he would have his head on the bench, and he couldn't eat. He just physically could not eat because of the noise and the smells. And then his afternoon behavior was just terrible, because he was trying to come down from all of that. And not only was he trying to come down from that level of arousal, but he was trying to come down from it on a completely empty stomach. And so there's no reason that can't be written into the IEP as an accommodation for him.
Like at our school, like I say, you know, the principal had said that, but then they have a table kind of set off to the side, and it's for if parents come and eat with their children.
Mm-hmm.
And Ty's aide was sitting with him at that table, and Ty seemed to really enjoy that. He kind of got him in the room, but yet
mm-hmm.
he wasn't in the middle of that. And she said he wasn't allowed to sit there. I didn't even think about getting that room.
Yeah, but no, but that's also, I mean, for him to sit at that table, if he's happy at that table, again, that's, if you request that as an accommodation to his IEP, that's an accommodation to his day.
Okay.
There's really no argument in my mind on their behalf where they could say, oh, that's, you know, I understand that's for their parents. You're not saying other parents couldn't sit there, but you're saying, you know, a table for him a little further away from all of the energy and excitement of the cafeteria so he can be in there. That's not asking a lot for an accommodation. It's not going to cost the district anything. It's going to help him still be with his peers. And quite honestly, because of the way I am, I would push it a little further and say I want, you know, one or two of his friends to be able to come eat with him so he could have a lunch buddy who is another child, so he still has that social time and can still have that social interaction with them. But I think that's a very fair accommodation to ask for.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I didn't even think about getting that written in his IEP. I had completely.
mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, that's actually a good segue into closing up this conversation tonight, because we're at the top of the hour. And I do want to remind everyone that this podcast will be available for download this Friday on the National Fragile X Foundation website, www.fragilex.org, barring any technical difficulties, but that is our goal, and you'll be able to subscribe to the podcast through your music and software players such as iTunes, iPod, Zune, or Juice. So check back on our website, and by Friday we should have it available. So if you want to listen to it again, or if you want to tell other members of the Fragile X community who did not have a chance to join us tonight that they can download this, please do that. And, of course, we'll be emailing everyone about the opportunity as well. We've got a couple, actually three more conference podcasts scheduled for 2011, and the first one will be about IEP planning. Dr. Vicki Sudhalter is going to be talking in February about maximizing the educational experience for children with Fragile X syndrome by developing an appropriate individualized education plan. That's scheduled for February 1st. Again, you only need to sign up and listen in on that date if you want to participate in the question and answer session, as we will have it available as a podcast. In May, we have Brenda Finucane talking about sexuality and relationships in teens and adults with Fragile X syndrome. And in August, self-regulation across the lifespan with Tracy Stackhouse, Mouse Scharfenacker, and parent Lorene Majeski. All of these were very highly regarded and well-received sessions at the most recent conference, and we're very pleased to be able to provide them to everyone. We will have more information about the upcoming podcast on our website and in the Foundation Quarterly, so stay tuned. But I want to thank all of you for joining us this evening. It's been a pleasure. And if you want to follow up with any questions, please contact Jane at treatment@fragilex.org. or myself, Linda@FragileX.org, and we will make sure your questions get directed to the appropriate person. I want to thank Holly. Fantastic presentation tonight. Very, very informative and helpful. And Jane, for all of your wisdom. And we'll look forward to talking to you all next time. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.